everybody, welcome to the Bituation Room / The Left Hook with Wajahat Ali. We're streaming on all the things and all the platforms. You got YouTube, you got Twitch, we got Waja's Substack, my Substack. It's a one big happy family. We're all thrown together, throwing ass over here. I hope someone's throwing ass. So thank you so much for being here. Waj, it's been a minute since you and I have even streamed because you are like really big time now in the Substack world and you don't have time for me anymore.
Yeah, or it's because you are busy doing 18 different cool things and are a mom and also doing stand-up comedy and I have no social life and I'm just stuck doing Substack lives. That's how we see each other. Like Francesca's like, you're blowing up. I'm like, I think I have no life and just I'm just stuck doing
Here the difference is that, and my audience knows this, is that I like my downtime. I need a little bit of non-streaming time. And I don't know.
No, we're both Danielle are smart because Danielle, my fabulous co-host, is like, you're a psychopath. Just listen to the lesbian in your life trying to save you. Do less, relax, sleep. And I'm like, you're right, Danielle. Next week, I'm doing 5 streams a day. She's like, yes. What's wrong with you?
Oh my God, there's so much to talk about. Let's see if we can get it all in there. I want to talk about, you know, the latest breaking news about the shutdown ending, the longest shutdown. We keep on outdoing ourselves on these shutdowns, but let's talk about the shutdown. I have to get a response to Erica Kirk. Janet Mills as well, dropping out of the Senate race in Maine. A piece of legislation that probably one of the most embarrassing pieces of legislation that's been introduced in the House. And that is a very low bar. I mean, very high bar for what is one of the worst pieces of legislation. We'll see what we get to before you have to go on your merry way, Waj. But first, this breaking news that the shutdown ended. Jamie Raskin tweeting the House GOP finally caved into reality and joined Democrats and Senate Democrats. House and Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans in voting to fund the rest of DHS except for ICE and Border Patrol. Why did Speaker Johnson make hardworking FEMA officials, TSA and Secret Service agents and other federal workers wait more than 2 months to receive their regular paychecks? Good freaking question. But this is wild. Like, this has been 76 days. Yep. And to the point about, we all know because a lot of us have been traveling. I mean, I had a trip coming up. I straight up, I don't know if you do this, I thanked my TSA agent. I was like, thank you for your service. Thank you for what you're doing. I didn't say service because I'm not that weird. But like, I was just like, thank you. Like, I didn't know what to say because these people have been without pay, seeking second jobs, going to food pantries. Yep. But also, I didn't realize that the Secret Service, you mean they protected the White House press correspondents' dinner without pay?
Which is probably why he was able to, the Cole Owens, who was the alleged shooter, was able to bum rush because they're like, I'm not getting paid for this shit. And that's why, did you see the videos where they kind of like slowly marched? You're like, all right, I don't blame them. This is all could have been avoided, Francesca. This was the Republicans being reeks, bending the knee to Donald Trump because there was a clean bill to pay these poor folks, right?
Yes. But
Donald Trump said, no, you're going to actually fund ICE and also the SAVE Act or else nothing. And then they're like, okay, a master has said that we can't pay you. Sorry, TSA. So all these poor folks, I think it's fair to say they're poor folks doing this job without pay, not knowing when this will end, being yep. led by a madman who led us into this unwinnable illegal war in Iran. They're just sitting there waiting for more than 2 months. Please, inshallah, give us a paycheck. And then what happened? Eventually, the House Republicans cried uncle. And this is why I was talking to Allison about this just in the last hour. It was because of us, the people, mm-hmm. putting pressure on the Democrats.
Yes.
Demanding that they fight, which is why they did this. Because under Schumer's leadership, they would have just caved, Francesca.
Yes. No, and I think it's not just that. I mean, obviously, it is ICE itself and the two assassinations that they carried out, the investigations into which we quite literally do not have. Yep. We do not know the conditions around. And now we know this week that Jonathan Ross was reassigned. he's back on the job. This is the man who murdered Renee Nicole Good and then called her an effing bitch after he murdered her. So that's what happened. And even myself, I'll be 100% transparent. You know, about like a few weeks ago, I was like, what are we doing? You know, like, why isn't TSA being funded? What's happening? I mean, clearly it seems like no one's budging on this. But Democrats really did hold the line. Democrats were, you know, again, to your point, listen to the people, listen to folks in their own caucus to say, no, 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 we can get them over the finish line here. We can actually, you know, make them fund all of these agencies without funding ICE and DHS. Now, Mike Johnson is out here saying that no, ICE and DHS have been funded, which it seems like he's just trying to rewrite some sort of budget reconciliation to make it look like they are funded. And it's like, first of all, ICE has always been funded throughout all of this. So that's a little bit of the sticking point here. The point was no new funding, right? If I'm not mistaken, it was like no more funding.
Yeah, you already have funding. I mean, you have billions of dollars. And thanks to the the $1 trillion billionaire tax cut, which will be permanent tax cuts paid by $1 trillion cuts to Medicaid. What people also forget is that billionaire tax cut, you also have $175 billion earmarked for ICE and private prisons.
Exactly.
They are funded and armed to the teeth, Francesca.
Yes, they are. So this is the bare minimum the Democrats could do. And we hope they do more. And we hope that at this point, there is a real review into ICE, and that some of these reforms, which again, we are of the mind that we should be abolishing this agency.
Absolutely.
But like, let's see what Democrats get across the finish line. Like, okay, next up, the job is not done. Now make Congress vote yes on unmasking these people. Vote yes on actually having some sort of due process when they murder people in the streets, right? I think that is, I mean, again, the radical in me is cringing at what I'm saying right now, because I honestly want to get rid of this agency altogether. I don't know if there's the votes to do that now, but there sure are votes to keep keep the names Alex Pretty and Renee Nicole Good in our mouths and our minds. I mean, we should not be moving away from this. I feel like even the latest assassination attempt on Trump, overshadowed, you know, them saying, oh, the left is so violent and all this, and they're the ones. And it's like, they own the narrative space to the point where we forget that their federal goons just murdered two people.
No, I don't forget it. I think people are sick and tired of it, Francesca. I think people just rolled their eyes all the way into the back of their head, and the eyes just came back around yes. to the 360. Because I don't think this shit works anymore. This shit used to work for 10 years, and you saw corporate media reeks doing their part. Dana Bash on CNN last weekend doing her shameful both sides bullshit. You saw PBS, and also you saw a piece in The Atlantic, Matt Visor. Donald Trump has a new tone. He could have mocked the media, but he's not supposed to mock the media. Don't give him flowers for things that he's not supposed to.
He could have mocked the media. He probably was going to when he did his little bit, right?
He did mock the next day, Francesca. The next day he went ahead in 60 Minutes, mocked and ridiculed Nora O'Donnell, and then he thought it made him look good. So he goes, oh, you're gross. You're disgusting. You asked that question. You're gross.
Yes.
And then Nora O'Donnell afterwards said, thank you so much for coming to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's like an abuser not abusing you. He said, thank you for not slapping me today. He's not supposed to slap you. But these people are reeks. They will never change. But the people have changed. I think, Francesca, the people are like, shut the F up. Stop with your bullshit. We know that you're corrupt. We know that you're an idiot. Our freaking grocery prices are high. Our oil prices are high. You led this in this unwinnable war. You can't release the Epstein files because you're all up in it. Just shut up. We're sick and tired of you. That's where I felt like the people are.
Absolutely. And I just to close this, you know, the government shutdown again, which should have never happened, but hopefully we can use as an opportunity to actually rein in ICE. You know, the FBI's investigation into Jonathan Ross, killed Renee Nicole Good and has now been reassigned, has been delayed and marked by a series of controversial moves. Six senior Justice Department officials quit in January over the department's handling of the case. Oh, what? Just because Cash was blackout drunk? Are you going to quit? So,
hey, Francesca.
Six of them quit. As did an FBI supervisor in the Minneapolis field office who was pushed to discontinue her civil rights probe into Ross. And while the DOJ claims the investigation is ongoing, the only thing that's come out of it is Ross returning to work. They're not doing investigations. It's over, guys.
No, federal prosecutors quit. And also another receipt. Federal prosecutors quit because the DOJ at that time, headed by Pam Bondi, said, don't investigate the murder of Renee Nicole Good. Investigate her widow.
I mean,
it's disgusting.
And I mean, I've never look. There's a little bit of sexism in these dismissals early on. Christine Noem, Pam Bondi, come on. These women have been carrying so much water for you, and not just in their chest. I'm kidding. Oh my God, that's just for Christine Noem's ex. But well,
wait, now I have to. Sorry, I have to.
Waj is doing all the act outs. If you're listening as a podcast, Waj has done a Cash Patel act out. He has also tried to put his hands in his chest and mimicked Christy Noem's ex-husband or current husband. I don't know.
Yeah, current husband. They're still together.
They are still together. You know, love is a strange thing. So anyway, glad we can, I guess, fly a little bit more comfortably and safely. It was a little bit ironic that we were starting yet another war on a so-called terrorist purveyor in the Middle East, while at the same time our government was defunding TSA, an entity that was like beefed up and militarized in the wake of the war on terror, so-called, to keep us safe, you know, because of like, I don't know, there was this thing that happened on, was it October 11th or September? I forgot. Anyway, it was something to do with planes. The point is it was very ironic how all of that defunding went down.
Francesca, it's all madness. You know, the FBI under Cash Patel and their anti-DEI stance has removed, as Pete Kekseth has done this, have removed qualified men and women, and thus literally made us less safe. I remember where the Charlie Kirk murder, we'll talk about Erica Kirk, I'm sure, but Charlie Kirk was murdered, and people forget this, that the leading FBI agent, it was Utah, right? Mm-hmm. The leading FBI agent in Utah was a Pakistani Muslim American woman who had signed up after 9/11. She was a legend in the field. People respected her, right? She had 2 decades worth of service. Guess what? She was let go. She was transferred. Why? Because of their attacks on DEI. So the FBI was flying blind. I always want to remind people that Charlie Kirk, their martyr, their hero, their prophet who was killed, until Tyler Robinson allegedly turned himself in based on his family member, they had nothing, Francesca. The Damn. FBI had no leads. Cash Patel had nothing. The FBI had nothing. And just to show you how evil they are, before they had any lead and any evidence, I want to remind you all, because we forget, Donald Trump, the president of the United States of America, did an address to the nation blaming radical left-wing violence and rhetoric.
Yeah. No, I mean, and just like, he immediately used a third assassination attempt to push his ballroom. It's like, my guy, I understand why all the conspiracy theories swirl. Number one, when things actually go down, like a federal agent murders someone in cold blood in the streets, we never get an investigation and we don't know anything about it, and it's open and shut. And so what do you expect to happen? People are going to start, you know, coming up with conspiracy theories when it's real, right? But so it's like, we don't even know anything honestly about, you know, Tyler Robinson either. We know a little bit, but very, very, very little. And so all I'm saying is, like, don't blame people for immediately going to conspiracy theories when Trump's first reaction is to weaponize this to his benefit.
Absolutely, Francis. That was my takeaway, because I was there in DC trying to get into the Substack party, and I told people, I said, watch how things will, you know, people start saying staged, and staged was trending for 3 days. I don't blame Americans, because this is what happens in a country where you have no faith in your lying, corrupt, criminal president. You have no faith in Pam Bondi, Cash Patel, or Todd Blanche. You have no faith in your law enforcement, and you have no faith in your corporate media who lined up like reeks in the White House Correspondents' Dinner to give fealty to a man who wants to kill them. That's why people, I don't blame people for, like, literally smart people have told me, Francesca, I don't trust anything. I don't trust anything that the Trump administration is saying.
Absolutely. And why should we? I do want to turn to Erica Kirk.
Bold.
Because, look, I have a very unconventional take on Erica Kirk. Is it mostly a comedic take? Yes. But I a little bit feel for her. Hear me out. Number one, she had to be married to Charlie Kirk, which is already sort of, you know, a death sentence until he got one. Just kidding. The point is, She is like caught between a rock and a hard place. Turning Point named her CEO. She didn't necessarily ask for that. She's thrust into the limelight. She's got kids. Her husband is murdered. Candace Owens and other whack jobs say that, you know, like she orchestrated this together with Israel. I mean, like, it's not an enviable position. And I might have more empathy if she weren't also kind of a crank and a like Christian nationalist psycho. So there's that. I do want to say that she kind of names the same thing that you said, Waj, in this weird screed that she gave from the former, you know, from Charlie Kirk's studio. She's basically like, it was really weird to see all of these media personalities, you know, whining and dining together, and then they go back to fighting each other. And she was, I think, like a lot of us kind of taken aback that like the White House Press Correspondents' Dinner even does go down that way, that it's like we're all going to come together and wear fancy dresses and get drunk. And then tomorrow we're going to hold each other accountable. So just to say that
I just love Karen. I call this Halloween costume Karen Janet Jackson, MAGA Rhythm Nation. What else?
MAGA No Rhythm Nation. This is like a, I mean, it's very ninja.
It's Janet Jackson from Rhythm Nation. That's what it is. That's what it reminds me of, right?
Straight like, without the good earrings, I think.
Without the good music and without the rhythm and the dancing. But can I say something about
exactly Rhythm Nation.
I applaud your empathy, but the reason why I'm less empathetic with people like Usha, Vance, Melania, and Erica.
No, I'm not empathetic with them. Don't lump them in.
I feel like she
My girl Erica is very different. Okay, she knows.
See, Rhythm Nation. But like she did so much better. It's Erica Kirk, whitewashing Rhythm Nation. Cultural cosplaying and failing miserably. Don't do our Janet Jackson like that. That, by the way, was gold. Those are the good old days of music. But let me say this. I think Erica knew what she was getting into. I think she was complicit every single step of the way. I think she still is complicit. And lady, you talked about her kids. Why don't you just spend time with your kids?
Go she see them.
Time with their kids.
Ew, but I'm sorry. They're Charlie Kirk spawn. You think anyone wants to spend time with them? Gross. No, but this was the part after sort of talking about the bizarreness of the White House Press Correspondents' Dinner. She talks about how the shots rang out. And I think we all saw photos of her crying. And look, people were making fun of that. Because I am a horrible lib, I have this thing called empathy. And I'm like, yeah, man, I don't know. If your husband was murdered with a gun, you might be a little triggered, literally, when there's another mass shooting in your presence, straight up. But look where she places the blame. Because does she place the blame where I think most of us place the blame, which is, why so much gun, America? Why all the gun, America? Here's where she goes with all this.
The president of the White House Correspondents Association, she did a great job of trying to make the evening have that feeling of Americana. You know, we were in a room celebrating freedom of speech despite our differences. And the U.S. Marine Band performed the national anthem so beautifully. And then shortly thereafter, gunshots rang out and total chaos ensued. And you guys have all seeing what happened next, because there are 1,000 videos of it. So let's discuss that fact for a second. If you were in that room,
here comes the moralizing. It's really
you rich. Had no way of knowing what the status of the shooter was, how many there were, or honestly really anything. It was just utter chaos. And so during an active shooting, these journalists are using their phones to find moments to capture for clips. They were so concerned about getting a video in a room with an active shooter that they could have accidentally and quite literally filmed themselves being shot. Many of those people have become so desensitized that fight or flight became secondary to the opportunity of putting themselves into the story, which ironically breaks the number one rule of journalism. And again, ironically enough, the shooter was a teacher.
Okay, so I just want to address the first thing. It's like, yeah, You don't understand our media landscape. Your fucking husband was a bona fide, certified propagandist who literally staged moments across the country for himself to debate college kids, right? And show them what's what, oh, for to film it, to get clips, to bolster himself. And lo and behold, you know, that was his demise at the end of the day. And you're surprised, you are surprised that people are going to whip out their phones and film not only what is happening, but like, you know, getting them. There were people doing selfies. I'm going to say they're MAGA, but maybe that was just me judging from the amount of lip filler they had. But like, it's just so funny to be like, wow, how dare you, journalists, do journalism and sensational journalism. It's almost like I haven't been paying attention.
It's my take on this is the following. Cole Allen never breached the room. He was actually on a separate floor. All right. In order to breach it, he would have to go through other security checkpoints. There was a few gunshots. We still have no proof that Cole Allen fired the gunshots. We still don't, folks. I'm going off of facts, all right? Most people were confused. Most people are like, eh, what was that? Interesting. You saw people still eating their salad. You saw people take champagne afterwards and then go to after parties because that's how traumatized they were. You had Donald Trump saying, I wanted to come back. The party should keep going because I have a 1-hour speech I've written where I mock and ridicule these losers and these enemy of the state.
Yes.
Right? Then you had, of course, for her, I didn't make fun of her either for the same reason because I'm like, maybe those tears were real. Maybe she was traumatized and triggered. So that's fine. But for the people there, they seem pretty okay. And also, speaking about that right-winger who took a selfie, the person that she's talking about, Olivia Rheingold, who centered herself,
yes,
didn't actually, Olivia, you know, look at what was happening. Olivia Rheingold of, can't make this shit up, the Free Press.
Yes, she's doing her little, like, Hasbaris, you know, hiding in a bunker moment. She was one of the first people who's like, okay, we're under the table, oh my God. Right, okay, so just to say, like, on all sides, and I don't think Erica Kirk's necessarily being blaming one or the other side. I think she's just sort of taking it back. But here's where it takes a more fun turn.
You have these people who are supposed to be teaching our children the future of this country. And he's so unhinged that he is able to teach children by day and then attempt to murder the president of the United States by night. And in his manifesto, he starts by contextualizing himself by saying, I am a citizen of the United States of America. And while we may have big problems with illegal immigration in this country,
yes,
I have to tell you, we have an even bigger problem when it comes to this systemic indoctrination and radicalization of our own citizens.
So close.
Systemic indoctrination and radicalization. I was like, what's the bigger problem?
Guns? No.
What is the bigger problem? Meanwhile, and let's just keep it 100. Meanwhile, if this shooting had taken place in Cole Allen's school and he has been murdered at the hands of a crazed gunman, right, who got like a young kid who got their hands on a friggin' AR-15 or whatever the hell, it wouldn't have made a single goddamn headline, certainly not on the right. They wouldn't have cared. When children die, when teachers die, they're like, oh, gee, what happened to your bulletproof chalkboard?
Well, what did her husband say? Her husband was asked this. Her husband said, hey, the price is worth it for the Second Amendment. The price is worth it for the Second Amendment. Who said that? Charlie Kirk. How was Charlie Kirk killed? By gun violence. Oh, the tragic irony of it all.
Live by the gun, die by the gun.
Literally, hey, folks, I'm not making this up. You don't like this? I'm sorry. This is what he preached. He was asked straight up about mass shootings, gun violence, school shootings. He goes, hey, well, you know what? The price is worth it for our liberty. You know what? This is the cost of living in a free society. And the tragic irony was he was killed in a shooting by allegedly a young man, a white man, who was also, that's the same identity of Thomas. I want to make sure I get his name right because we don't talk about him. Thomas Crooks. The shooter.
Oh, Crooks. Butler, I always say Cook.
Crooks. Who, by the way, white man, gun enthusiast. Former Trump voter. Also, I want to remind people, the other young white man who was killed, the person who tried to trespass in Mar-a-Lago, young white man in his 20s, former, wait for it, Trump voter, not a radical leftist who was radicalized by the Epstein files.
Was that, so there was the, I thought that, that the guy was Ryan Wesley Ruth, who was, or, but was he, did he try to get access to their, to the golf club, I think.
Yeah, golf club. It was September 2025.
The man not Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, yeah. He was, no, no, in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, right? Was that the different man? Hold on, hold on. Okay. No, no. So you, that's another guy. So the guy you're talking about, Ruth, was a man found guilty of attempting to assassinate Trump in Florida. When he was convicted in September and sentenced, he tried to stab himself with the pencil in the neck. That's the third guy that no one talks about.
So nobody talks about it.
There's three, and all three of those guys were white guys, former Trump voters who were radicalized by Trump. They never mentioned that, Francesca.
No, yeah. I mean, that's why, you know, that's why they couldn't have the party go on, because this was the first time. It was like a guy, he's mixed race, he's from Torrance, California, he's a teacher, he's like a, he's a lib pretty much. I mean, he was on Blue Sky tweeting a lot, like, you know, this is someone who, which again, kind of shows you and speaks to, we don't have to get into this too much, but a certain amount of desperation that I think a lot of liberals, progressives, former Democrat or current Democratic voters feel that their leaders aren't doing enough to stop the, you know, endless atrocities that, that this administration is waging on people. I mean, you know, here's what I'll say. I want to be careful with my words, but I do think it is very, you know, something that Luigi kind of proved is that people are responsive to the moral idea that someone might not actually be a murderer, meaning they didn't personally kill people, but that their policies and that their decision-making led to the murder of many, many people. In that case, people seeking life-saving treatment that they couldn't afford or were, you know, couldn't actually visit a doctor. And when it comes to United Healthcare, when you think about this president, not only the whatever dozens and dozens, was it like 50, 60 young schoolgirls in Iran, in Minab, who were killed? The
165.
Thank you. 165 children and their family members killed in a double tap strike on a school in Iran, blood on Donald Trump's hands. To the dozens of people who've died in federal detainment centers here in this country, like the amount of blood that Donald Trump has on his hands. So if we're sort of doing like a broad moral equivalence, again, no one is justifying an attempted assassination, but I do think that we are, you know, honest enough at this point in our lives to say, yeah, you don't just get to get away with murdering other people. There should be some sort of accountability, and you too are a murderer. You are implicated in this murder.
You're complicit in a system. You are part of the Epstein class. You're part of the 1% against the rest of us. You are upholding the institutions that were designed never to help us, but to oppress us. And as such, you're profiting off of our misery and our death. And that's why, folks, this is where we are right now. Even though I've condemned vigilante violence because we live in a country with more people, with more guns than people, 400 million guns, with more mass shootings than any other country on earth. Every time I travel, I'm sure you get this also, Francesca. People are like, why are you all so obsessed with guns? Stop it with the guns. Why are you so crazy? But in this country, the reality is, as Francesca said, a majority of Americans support Luigi Mangione, the alleged killer of the United Healthcare CEO. What we got a couple of weeks ago, I'm sure, Francesca, you saw that news item where that young man who worked in the paper factory filmed himself burning down the paper factory. And then he said, you just had to pay us a living wage. Where you saw in the Amazon factory in California where a man drops dead and the managers tell the other workers, work around them. Where you saw Tesla, another arson attempt at Tesla 2 weeks ago. And while that was happening, folks, it coincided with a puff piece done by New York Times on Laura Bezos, where she said, I want to stop apologizing for being rich, and I want to be happy, and this is our happiness routine. Francesca, throughout history, anytime there is such obscene income inequality, it does not matter about your religion, ethnicity, or national origin, there is a spike in violence, and people, you see this now, unfortunately, people are sick and tired, Francesca, and I think people, there's a rising fire, there's a rage.
100%. I just want to play the rest of this, a little bit of it, because of course we get to the most fun part.
This is what got my husband killed. This is what has led to three legitimate attempts on President Trump's life.
Guns?
And I can speak firsthand to that unbearable toll that this must take on our First Lady. There has never been a president who has faced this many assassination attempts in Americans' entire history.
Obama faced a lot.
And after each one,
he did, but also
the reaction
kind of
from the far left has been, at best, a shrug, and in some cases, a sick disappointment that the shooter was unsuccessful. We are all human beings. And if you can just pause and just take a minute and ask yourself, how would you feel?
How would I feel?
If even just one person made cruel jokes about the attempted murder of your loved one.
Oh, I mean, they do that a lot.
Kimmel did Charlie Kirk did that. He said that she had the
Jimmy
glow
Kimmel.
Of an expected widow.
It's like
the glow of an expected widow.
Just she doesn't blink. Francis can't
before
be
that
she doesn't
nightmare
blink.
Almost became a reality. In this culture we're living in, absorbs disagreement as a form of personal betrayal. It turns what? Having an opposing viewpoint into a moral crime worthy of punishment. And here's what I've realized through all of this.
Oh God, your fucking husband made a living off doing that. Saying that if you disagree with me, it's like a moral betrayal.
Her and husband, also, Francesca, real quick, her husband tried to bail out David DePape, who almost killed Paul Pelosi. They mocked him. So did Donald Trump. With the diaper on the ear, he did the hammer thing. These people are frauds. They're frauds. And I think I'm done with them. Call them out. They're hypocrites. Yeah. And she's so weird.
Truly. Having lived through quite literal hell these past 7 months, if you strip someone of their humanity long enough, you will arrive at the chilling conclusion that they don't deserve to exist at
what?
All.
Wait, is she going to be the next mass shooter? I feel she's giving mass shooter vibes right now.
She's like the Hamburglar, also Rhythm Nation. She might start dancing. Someone just said she's Sarah Connor from Terminator, so she might like go kill like Skynet. I don't know what, but she's out of it. She's scary.
Every morning I wake up to a new headline
in a different hotel around the world where I've been flown.
I have comedians dressing up in whiteface. I have people saying I'm not fit to be CEO.
Everyone.
And I have Candace Owens claiming I murdered my husband.
That's on you, girl.
And the list goes on and on.
You created
But just don't be as creepy about it. Like, I feel you, girl. But, like, you're so creepy with it. And also, you can't say whiteface. Like, you don't get to be offended by this because it's objectively hilarious.
And you know what he said? He said, like, I never mentioned Erica Kirk.
This is Drusky.
And that is why we say our prayers. We are all his children. But when I say children, I mean, like, the Holy Blessed Trinity, which is why I hold the Bible.
Too good. There are comedians doing white face. I know you gotta go be a dad. Thank you so much for joining me. I might if folks want to stick on, we're gonna talk about Janet Mills, and we're gonna talk about Hassan Piker and a new piece of legislation. But thank you so much for being here, Waj.
I wish I could stay the full hour because I do want to. I have thoughts about the manufactured Hassan Piker controversy and how it was a Barbara Streisand effect, boomeranged, only served to help Abdullah Saeed, only served to mainstream Hassan Piker, and makes people more and more pissed off about the involvement of AIPAC and pro-Israel hacks in our democracy. The Democratic National, the DNC, has to release the audit, and they have to come to terms with the fact that a majority of Americans are done supporting a genocide. They're done supporting ICE. They're done supporting AIPAC. They do not want money from AI and crypto and Palantir infecting our system. And they better wake up. And I feel like the fire is rising, Francesca. I feel people are sick and tired and they're done. So good luck, Democrats. You got 2 years to learn.
Yes. Thank you so much, Waj.
Thank you all.
Thank you, left hook people. If you want to stick around, let's get into it, because literally the phrase, whereas Hassan Piker, has been entered into the lexicon, ladies and gentlemen. This is a piece of legislation, obviously introduced by Representative Gottheimer. And the reason I say, obviously, it's Josh Gottheimer, who is a Zionist stooge. But not only that, it's important to remember that Josh Gottheimer was someone who was also very influential in tanking Joe Biden's Build Back Better plan. Josh Gottheimer leading representatives in the House against progressives and the Biden agenda to temper the Build Back Better plan, like that included things like, you know, home care for the elderly, expanded child tax credits, expanded universal pre-K, all of these big ideas that Democrats had this glorious window, right, of 2021 to go back on. Gottheimer was key in basically a bunch of centrists, you know, lobbying the president to gut all those things away from and ultimately not pass it. It wasn't just Manchin and Sinema. But now, remember, it's been now about a month of Hassan Piker hysteria. A month where simultaneously the United States has been carrying out war crimes daily in Iran, leading to insane gas price hikes, leading, you know, to say nothing of, like, you know, again, civilian death. And instead of actually focusing on what is our line on Iran, what can we actually say? You know, let's end forever wars. This is a waste of U.S. taxpayer money. We just killed hundreds of schoolgirls. What are we doing? We're getting our ass handed to us by Iran that's 3D printing drones over here. I don't know if they're 3D printed, but you know what I'm saying. They're like $20,000 here, taking out all of our military equipment in the region and bombing our supposed allies. This is bad. Instead, it's been all about Hassan Piker. And like Waj said, instead of releasing the autopsy, which is basically a moment for every party to say, okay, we lost. Why did we lose? Let's talk about it. Or we won. Why did we win? Let's talk about it. I'm sure the Trump administration is doing that right now. Gottheimer has introduced this legislation to officially condemn Hassan Piker. Condemning anti-Semitic hate-filled rhetoric and content disseminated by prominent online personalities and urging social media platforms and public leaders to denounce and address such. Dude, you already took away TikTok. You already sold off TikTok. You forced the sale of TikTok to American companies that now include, you know, Zionist father and son, David and Larry Ellison, or Larry and David. I don't care. Right? Larry and David. It's the worst Harry and David. It's like, you know, a basket of fruit, but, you know, grenades. The point is, like, this is so funny that they've officially censored TikTok, right, when it comes to Palestine speech. And now it's like, ah, shoot, we have to go against Twitch now or more influencers. So here they are. This is so laughable. Whereas anti-Semitism has surged in the United States and globally in recent years, fueled in part by online disinformation, conspiracy theories, and extremist rhetoric, whereas anti-Semitic incidents have significantly increased, including a 344% increase over the past 5 years, which, again, progressive, leftist, anti-Zionist Jews will tell you that many of those incidents that get classified as anti-Semitic are, in fact, anti-Israel, right? Like the attempted attack on a synagogue in Michigan, where the man's entire family had been killed in southern Lebanon because of Israel and this ridiculous war. And it was immediately labeled anti-Semitic. And again, this is not excusing it, but let's just name what it is. It is blowback. It is blowback for militarism. It is blowback for, you know, for supporting Israel. Okay? It's not justified, but you understand how someone is making those links. Whereas Hassan Piker, a prominent online streamer, has often used anti-Semitic rhetoric, including expressing support for Hamas and designated foreign terrorist organization. I just want to name that, like, people sort of willy-nilly saying that Hassan supports Hamas, clearly don't listen to like what he has said. And I think what he has said is like, if you give me a choice between the IDF that, you know, cut off electricity to incubators in children's hospitals in Gaza, causing, you know, 50 babies to die in their incubators and perish, or Hamas, which is, you know, an extremist movement, also has a political wing, also won an election, was voted in, has been living under a blockade from land, air, and sea, and is part of, although more of the extreme part of, a Palestinian resistance, I'm going to go with Hamas. I'm pretty sure that's what he said. I think it was a choice. Okay, so then we talk about Candace Owens and all of this resolved. Anti-Semitic rhetoric and conspiracy theories disseminated by influential online personalities, including Hassan and Candace, are dangerous and contribute to a climate of hatred and intolerance. You know what contributes to a climate of hatred and intolerance? Weapons to a genocidal nation, okay? Weapons to a nation that is currently ethnically cleansing the West Bank and violently evicting Palestinians from their villages and their homes, brutally beating elderly women who are harvesting their olives in their on their lands until what? Until they move. Until they feel no longer safe to be in their homes and they move, right? That is currently what's happening in the West Bank. So I know people who are like, dude, before I even saw this, I knew it was Gottheimer who sponsored this bill. But this was the natural pinnacle of all of this anti-Hassan insanity, was to get to this point of creating a bill. You just got to put it to a vote. You know, never mind the fact that Randy Fine, Congressperson Randy Fine, has said that, what, Palestinians are animals? That, like, Islam, you know, is a... like, is a backwards religion, that they deserve it. Anyway, it's pretty amazing. And I am this is a Democrat, you guys. This is a Democrat. And now that Gottheimer is in the news, everyone needs to go, oh my God, I'm forgetting his name. Wait, hang on. Who, oh, no, never mind. Wrong guy. It's all good. I was hoping we were pushing somebody else for Congress, but that's a different person. The point is, let's move away and talk about some good news. There is good news, guys. And I'm going to say good news because this is for all of us who really want the Senate to be different, want senators who are not, number one, on death's doorstep, but number two, are not going to, you know, be selling us out to the AI crypto bros, are not going to be, you know, afraid of saying boo to corporations, are going to be doing things like vetoing a ban on data centers, which is what Governor Janet Mills just did in Maine. And look, I liked Janet Mills when she stood up to Trump around trans athletes in her state, right? I thought that was good. That was one of the first things coming off of the second election of Donald Trump, right? And all the governors are sort of like, you know, kowtowing, and everyone's not sure how to play it. And Janet Mills stands up to him in this like governor's luncheon and is like, yep, I'll see you in court. That was a great moment for her. Since then, not so much. Since then, Janet Mills has not been leading on pretty much any issue, and in fact now is actively crushing things like a moratorium on data center construction. Again, data centers, which are AI data centers, which guzzle and pollute an incredible amount of water and air, polluting communities around them, people with respiratory diseases that have cropped up just in the wake of the last year or 2 years of the data center construction boom. And the fact that she is holding back progress in her own state, I mean, I think, look, this was last week. She knew she was dropping out. This was a like, okay, I'm going to make, you know, the Kirsten Gillibrand senator to AI lobbyist switch. Like Janet Mills, she's old, but she probably needs something to do. Who knows? But it's giving that. It's giving a lot of like, I'm going to probably be a lobbyist for like building data centers, either in Maine or elsewhere. And I know I'm not going to win the Senate. I know I'm not going to actually be a senator. And let's just call it what it is. Credit to this guy. Graham Plattner, veteran with bad tattoos, who is very much running on a populist agenda, an agenda against war, against genocide, for Medicare for all, for a Green New Deal, for real systemic change, very much speaking to working class people, who has been quite literally crushing it in Maine. And look, it's difficult for us outside of Maine to understand the impact that this man has had on Maine politics. But he's breaking through. Whether or not you like him, you believe him, you know, you think that, you know, his story about getting, you know, this like bad Nazi tattoo is bullshit or not, it doesn't matter, because Mainers like him. Mainers like him, and they believe him, and they think he's honest.
It's of that, and Benjamin Netanyahu finally found.
This is what he's saying.
It's a mix of that and Benjamin Netanyahu finally found a president that was sucker enough to launch the war that he's been pushing for 30 years. But yeah, those are the reasons. It's a mix of that and Benjamin Netanyahu finally found a president that was sucker enough to launch the war that he's been pushing for 30 years.
Benjamin Netanyahu finally found someone who is sucker enough to go to this war. And it's absolutely true. By the way, it's not Kirsten Gillibrand, Kirsten Sinema. I'm so sorry. Kirsten's. I get my Kirsten's mixed up. These are the kinds of things that Graham Plattner has been saying. And again, when people say that, you know, foreign policy is not a big issue for Americans, no, it is, because it definitely shows you and is a hat tip and a sign to your voters that you're paying attention, that you know what's right and you know what's wrong, and you know how to better spend their taxpayer dollars than to send them to kill people and Palestinians abroad. Here's what he said. This was last year, speaking with CNN.
Speaking of Israel, do you think that the U.S. should stop aiding Israel, should pull back on aid to Israel?
Yes, I mean, I fundamentally believe that a nation that is committing a genocide should not be a place that we are putting money. We should be leveraging the fact that we have a lot of power in this relationship due to our funding. We should be leveraging that to, frankly, get the Israeli government to stop behaving in such an utterly atrocious fashion. Mm-hmm. I do think that. We need to be spending money here at home.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a reason why I love this statement when he says leverage. We have enormous amount of leverage and we need to use that leverage. But let me just say, this is the kinds of things he's putting out, you know, last year. It's not complicated. Not our taxpayer dollars can build schools and hospitals in America, not bombs to destroy them in Gaza. Picture of him looking hard. The reason I appreciate him saying we have to use our incredible amount of leverage is, number one, it's true. But number two, it shows a little bit of an elevated understanding that I think some have failed to show in this moment. And that's when they actually get into some real anti-Semitic territory, which is when they say Israel runs America. Israel's calling the shots. Israel, you know, our country and government are owned by Israel. You know, free America from Israel. America first, not Israel first, right? Free America from Israel. Do you think that like Donald Trump and all the people making money off this, do you think that anyone feels bad that they're like, oh no, they're in a supporting a Netanyahu war in Iran. Oh no, they're going to get all the spoils from whatever new Gaza gets created, beachfront property. Oh no, no. Donald Trump's getting millions of dollars from Miriam Adelson, Sheldon Adelson's widow, to annex the West Bank and support that policy. Our military industrial complex loves this. Our tech military industrial complex loves this. This is mass consensus, not just on a bipartisan level often, but on a corporate and governmental level. This is very much in line with a fascistic American policy, is to support Israel. So this language of free us from Israel, no, that is really messed up language. Graham Plattner instead is saying things like, We need to leverage. We are the superpower in this relationship. We have the money. We hold the purse strings, and we need to be willing to leverage it. They don't call the shots. We call the shots. Now, of course, when you have such little errand boys like Donald Trump and honestly, Joe Biden, of course, we start to lose sight of who's calling the shots and who's zooming who. But the fact of the matter stands. And so what I see in Graham Plattner's anti-genocide stance has no whiffs or inklings of the Tucker Carlson, of the Candace Owens, of all these bad faith right wingers, you know, that we're supposed to congratulate for having, you know, an anti-genocide stance, when in fact they rarely say the word Palestinian. They rarely seem to even care about human rights in that region. They rarely have like a vision or an idea of either. They never say two-state solution, which, let's be real, is a very sort of centrist position to hold. But of course, they don't talk about like a future of peace, of living under equal rights, of living with full, you know, full civil rights, Palestinian, Arab, or Jewish, right? Like that's it never enters into the discussion. So I like this from Graham Plattner. And I also want to just see what Janet Mills has to say. She's suspending her candidacy for U.S. Senate, which the poll numbers must be dropping, y'all. First of all, she was already down next to Plattner, but not like horribly. And he has been up against poll after poll against Susan Collins, you guys. He has been every single poll versus him and Susan Collins. He's winning. Right now, we'll see what happens. And there is something else to show you. But she says, over the past 6 months, I've had the privilege of campaigning across Maine and doing what I love most, meeting with Maine people. I'm grateful beyond words for the outpouring of love and support I have received from folks in every corner of the state, from Madawaska. That's a great, great city, or whatever that is. Madawaska to Kittery, from Wrangley to Eastport. Maine, you wild girl. As district attorney, attorney general, and now as governor, I've always fought for Maine people. Together, we've expanded healthcare, fully funded education, guaranteed free community college and free school meals, protected reproductive freedom, made our state more resilient to pollution and violent storms caused by climate change. Yet these efforts have been undermined by a Republican administration that is blind to science, deaf to the cries of those in need, and ignorant of regular families. KKK. I step back from my campaign with unending love, admiration, and hope for the Maine people. A people whose hearts are filled with love and whose integrity and humility is surpassed only by their kindness, generosity, and compassion. To the people of Maine, I love you, and I will continue to fight relentlessly for you as your governor. For the next 8 months, I will continue working hard for you, standing up to what's right, defending the Constitution, and doing what I can to preserve our democracy. And as always, while I'm suspending active campaigning, I look forward to seeing you at Rennie's, at a Hearts of Pine game, or maybe even on a trout pond in western Maine. Thank you for always being my North Star and for the privilege of serving you as governor of the great state of Maine. Okay, where's the part? Oh, here we go. When I decided to run, it was because I believe Maine people were getting a bad deal from Washington, and because the president of the United States was threatening our democracy and pushing our nation to the brink of disaster. I continue to believe that today. While I have the drive and passion and commitment and experience, and above all else, the fight to continue on, I very simply do not have the one thing that political campaigns unfortunately require today: the financial resources. Wait, what? That's why today I have made the incredibly difficult decision to suspend my campaign for the United States Senate. Damn. What? Wait, was AIPAC not spending on her? I know there was like a little bit of AIPAC money, maybe, you know, from like prior races, but like, are they tapped out? Were they tapped? She doesn't have the resources. That's wild. This is her basically saying, I'm young enough. I'm hot enough. I can absolutely do this. But y'all weren't donating. And let's be real. It's not just big donors, right? It is small dollar donors. It is getting the excitement of the people. So that's crazy. That is nuts to me. Excuse me from doing some live Googling. Yeah, I mean, Plattner's campaign has a volunteer base of 15,000 and he raised $4 million. Collins has a cash advantage. Mills brought in $2.6 million, down from $2.7 million in the final quarter of 2025, which had also included her campaign launch. So, I mean, this is the hard, cold reality of the Democratic primaries. Let's be real. And meaning progressive Democrats, we have suffered some losses, particularly and specifically because of fundraising. It's one of the reasons why we believe in getting money out of politics. It's one of the reasons why I believe, and I think a lot of y'all believe, we need publicly financed campaigns. People should not have to be millionaires just to be able to run for office. But the money is where it's at. And Plattner outraising shows, and you know he's not making friends with the data centers, with tech, with, you know, real estate. I mean, maybe the oyster farming industry has gone hard on him, but I can't imagine that's very much money. When it comes down to it, if you're not fundraising, that's it. That's going to be a wrap. You can't buy the ads. You can't buy the spots. You can't buy the, you know, whatever it is. Which is funny because Mills is straight up Chuck Schumer's chosen girl. Like, that's it. He chose her. The centrists, the establishment chose Mills. And she couldn't do it. Not enough, you know, pancake breakfast for wives of private equity firms or private equity firm CEOs. I'm not saying there isn't one or two women out there. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's crazy to me. Devil's Advocate says Big Oyster is the real power. I know. Here's what I want. When Plattner wins and beats Susan Collins, can we all have some oysters? All right? I don't care where you are. I bet the going rate for oysters in Maine is so cheap. By the way, they're American made. I mean, the sea made them. I mean, the sea is being polluted by Americans, but it's okay. It'll be fine. Around my parts, it's like $3.50, $4.50 per oyster. Worth it. I haven't had oysters in a very long time. So worth it. You guys, this is good news. It's good news for people who actually want to see shit get done. It's good news for people who want to fight fascism with real populism, with real ideas. It's good for people who don't want to see a Tucker Carlson presidency, you know, in 8 years or 12 years. Like, this is good. When we elect Democrats like Graham Plattner, we pull ourselves out of the lion's mouth of fascism, because it means we've got vision. It means we've got ideas. It means we're centering the working class, which, as Zohran Mamdani recently said, there is only one majority in this country, and that is the working class. And to prove that this has been kind of a knockout victory, because a lot of me was saying this morning, I was like, uh-oh, Democratic donors, they're going to go negative on Graham. What's going to happen? Will the Democratic Party embrace him? Well, it's a little helpful when the Democratic nominee isn't a Muslim South Asian like Zohran Mamdani. I'm calling it a little bit racist, but the official Democrats account on Twitter put out this tweet. Maine, let's send an oyster farmer to the U.S. Senate and kick out Susan Collins. I mean, look, it is just Twitter, but it feels like a pretty big ringing endorsement, right? Zohran didn't get this. Zohran did not get that. Zohran did not get that. Jose Kelly, Chuck Schumer still hasn't endorsed Zohran. Chuck Schumer is still in denial that Zohran is even mayor of New York. But that being said, very, very good that they're actually like, this is what you should be doing. This is your Senate candidate. You get on board. You need him to win. You need to beat Susan Collins. And honestly, she is very, very, very beatable. Honestly, do I trust Plattner, says Under the Lens? I trust Plattner more than I trust Janet Mills, and certainly more than Susan Collins. And I think the rest is up to us, right? And I think Plattner, for all the things that he's bared down with the questions about his past, about, you know, he did work for Blackwater, right? You know, he does have this tattoo on himself that he, like, you know, got covered up and he was like, I really didn't know. He's got a lot to prove. He's got a lot to prove to Mainers. He's got a lot to prove to the rest of the country. And I think he himself said, look, people are calling, you know, or who are worried that I'm going to be a Fetterman. I understand. And I would be worried too, but I'm going to prove that I'm not, basically. I'm going to actually prove myself. So he also will have a buddy in there, and that's Bernie Sanders. So that's going to be very, very critical. And we need yet another vote, you guys, against weapons to Israel. Remember, Senate Democrats got 40 votes, 40 votes. One, the biggest in, I think, really in history, in voting against sending more weapons to Israel. Now, that's a far cry from 51, but that is on the right, in the right direction. So, God, I have to just mention before we wrap, that, you know, 22 boats were intercepted overnight, sailing to Gaza, and they were intercepted in Greek waters, y'all. So Israel has intercepted 200 peace activists. One of them is a contributor to Zeteo, by the way, Alex Colston. And they were 600 miles from Gaza. Remember, we've seen, I don't know if you guys remember the Global Samud Flotilla. This is the same Global Samud Flotilla. They had gotten very close to Gaza. I mean, we're talking like 40 miles. It was close. It was very close. I was watching, it was like middle of the night, you know, we were like, oh God. And then of course, one by one, they were each intercepted, but it was brave and heroic and truly incredible. This time, 600 miles off the coast of Gaza, they were intercepted. So not in Israeli waters. This is arguably not even international waters. Furthest away from Gaza, Israel has seized an aid flotilla, no legal authority that enables the Israeli government to commit what some are calling piracy in international waters. Francesca Albanese said, how on earth is it possible? Again, UN Special Rapporteur said, how on earth is it possible that Israel is allowed to assault and seize vessels in international waters just off Greece and Europe? And so this is why we need people like Plattner. Because it's not just about stopping aid, military aid, and all aid to Israel. It is also about holding them accountable. It is about looking back. And I don't want to hear anyone who say, oh, we got to forget, we got to move past. No. This is about holding them accountable for the crimes they've already committed. This is about making sure aid is in, but not just aid, but the ability for Gazans to rebuild on their terms. And when a country like Israel violates international law, usually they get sanctioned. So this is to me, the task at hand is not just refusing to fund their genocide or their wars of expansion in Lebanon, in the West Bank, and in Gaza, but also sanctioning them in the future. What does that mean? Right? That means you can't do business with them. It means the same thing that it is meant for the Iranian regime, right? Which is operated under sanctions, low these many years. It's the same reason that the United States has its naval fleet in the Strait of Hormuz saying, sorry, you can't send much needed gas supplies. Oh my God, you can't send them abroad because you've been sanctioned. I think that's a future that we can look forward to, but justly applied to a country like Israel, if I'm being quite honest with you. Hey, Clemens, thank you so much for that super chat. That is really, really generous of you. And if you're still watching from the left hook, what's up? I hope you become a subscriber to me, frannyfeo.substack.com. You know, I might not be Waj, but whatever. I've got a shirt with crabs on it. So there you go. Now the Zen, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. They are all fighting Hassan. Absolutely. And Hassan basically said as much, right? Hassan said, this is, you know, they're afraid. They're afraid of us. They're afraid of people like him. They're afraid of people who truly talk about the 1% as being the biggest problem in this country. The military industrial complex is the problem. Our corporate overlords is the problem, not leftists or trans athletes or immigrants or women or anyone else that the right likes to scapegoat, and sadly that the Democratic Party so easily buys into the scapegoating of. We need to actually shake things up. And I think Hassan has been very successful at doing that. Not really. Rachel Atwood says, can I get some love for my bud Jerome Wallen officially getting on the ballot in Massachusetts is first. Western Mass deserves so much better than the number one corporate cash recipient in Congress. Let's make it happen. Okay. Wait, I got to get him on then. And Shea Stewart Booley is a great Maine journalist. Thank you so much. Yes, Cinema is the lobbyist for data centers. Thank you, Moondragon. Mooniversary, 15 months strong. Member on YouTube. By the way, I'm rolling out interviews for the Bituation Room, one-on-one interviews. If you are a paid Substack member, if you are a member on YouTube, or my personal favorite, a patron, patreon.com/bituationroom, you will get exclusive content rolling out next weekend. Next weekend, yes, May 9th, one-on-one in-studio interviews. They're so cute, you guys. I got a studio. It's adorable. It's not mine. I rent it with your help. And I'm super open to any ideas you have for people you think I should interview to here in Los Angeles. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Jim Bear, also over on Twitch, Pickle Hippie, resubscribing on Twitch. Thank you to everyone also in Substack. I can't watch. I should be watching live over there, but what up? Thank you so much. I do this show Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Next week, we have Matt Bernstein of the A Bit Fruity podcast. That's going to be great. We also have a one Butch Ware, who is running for governor here in California, who is not on the ballot officially, but is going to be a write-in candidate. So stay tuned for that. But first, Monday, you guys, Monday, May 4th, I will be live on this channel, streaming with Tom Steyer, gubernatorial candidate, gubernatorial. I hate the word gubernatorial, and I don't want to say it. He's running to be California's governor. He's going to come on the Bituation Room. Send me your questions for him. I know I have a lot myself. So tune in for that. If you have questions about Steyer, if you're curious, if you're dubious, I am all of the above. And so join me, Californians, and the rest for that interview. And coming up right after this, you guys, I did an interview with New York congressional candidate for District 7, Claire Valdez. And District 7 is a deep blue district. Nydia Velasquez is retiring, and she's had an incredible tenure as a very progressive legislator and leader. Claire Valdez is hoping to step into those, as she called it, very big shoes. So stay tuned to that. We have a lot of good discussion about how union organizing and her background informs what she hopes to do in Congress. Thank you, Dizzle McFizzle. I do need money for food. I need money for kombucha. Because these shits are like $8 now. No, times are tight, and so it means the world. Subscribe to me, FrannyFio.substack.com, YouTube.com/FrannyFio. Listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Become a patron, patreon.com/bituationroom. And until next time, remember, fight the power, fuck the patriarchy, free Palestine, and don't just bitch about it, be about it. Bye.